Okay, folks, good evening. We're going to go ahead and get started. Go ahead and grab a seat. Circle up, grab a, there's some, well, we have stuff on the stairs tonight, but we don't really need that, so we're good. Welcome. We're glad that you're here. My name is Justin. Welcome to Theology on Tuesday. This is Brian, and we are excited to be with you tonight. We're going to have a great conversation about something we're both really passionate about, but a few housekeeping items. You'll see these little sheets of paper around the room. You can scan that top QR code, ask any question you want. We'll do our best to answer them as quickly as possible at the end of our time. You can join our email list down by the bottom left on this sheet of paper. There are a couple of other things there on the right, bottom right side that I want to draw your attention to. Saturday serves. We've had a couple of people want to find ways to actually serve outside of this time, and so that's a great opportunity. You can join folks at St. Philip's. We're both members of the clergy at St. Philip's Church. It's a great way if you're looking to serve. This next one is going to be awesome. It's called Hope to Home. Anybody heard of Hope to Home Ministries before? No? Okay. We have. That's great. So it's a really wonderful thing. No matter if you can lift a lot, that's wonderful, because they literally take home goods, basically, and beds and furniture and all sorts of stuff to help folks who've fallen on hard times have a place to live. And so they have a giant warehouse where they then will take and load up stuff and take it to various places around town. That'll be really helpful for folks, and you'll be able to do that in person firsthand, which is really exciting. Also, if you don't have the capacity to lift a lot of weight, that's fine. They still have a lot of needs. I've put some of those there. You can be assembling various things, linens, kitchen kits, that sort of thing. So if you're looking for a way to serve and give back with others, that's a great opportunity. Lastly, Holy City Life is a group of folks that meets outside of Theology on Tuesdays. It's young adults, mostly in their 20s, early 30s, who are looking for fellowship outside of this time. So if you're looking for more of that, join the Holy City Life group me. All right, with that, Brian, what are we talking about tonight?
So we are talking about wonder.
What is that? Why are we talking about it?
So wonder means lots of different things. So we are not talking about wonder in the sense of being confused about something and wondering what someone's talking about. We're talking about wonder in the sense of awe and wonder, things that move your heart and your soul, that draw you to a sense of amazement about something.
So this week was really fun. I don't know, I've never done a word search. I did wonder and awe and amazement, or amaze, I think, and just looked in the New Testament. It was insane how often
everywhere
that comes up in the Bible. And it struck me, like, on the one hand, a lot of the disciples, a lot of the crowds, they see Jesus and they experience wonder and awe, and they're amazed. Then the other times that you'll see, like, the religious leaders or the Pharisees, they are marveling or amazed, or they have wonder, but then that is a kind of not disbelieving for joy, right? Which is one of the things that you hear at Easter when the disciples see the risen Jesus. They disbelieved for joy, but they actually wonder, and then they seek to kill him all the more.
Right.
And so there's two various ways of wondering and being in awe of who Jesus is, very different results potentially on how you handle that wonder, I guess. But what were some of the things? So I've done a lot of looking into the New Testament to see. I'm excited just to talk a little bit about what the importance of this is and how we can grow in that. But what were some of the things that you thought about or wanted to start with tonight?
Well, I think there are just so many things with this topic. And one of the reasons that I was excited to talk about this is that I think this is one of those theological concepts that there's actually something you can do practice-wise to help live into this more, which is exciting, because there's some things that you hear about and you think, well, that's nice, but you know, what could I ever do to grow in that? But I think wonder is something you can grow in. And this may be either the best analogy you've ever heard or the worst analogy you've ever heard. So just go with me for a moment. When we would go visit in my wife's family home, they had a really lovely home, and in the corner of their very lovely living room that had all this nice art and furniture and all of that, there was a grand piano. And the grand piano sat in the corner, and it essentially functioned as something that you could put flower arrangements on. Mm. It just sat there. It acted as a table. And it was a pretty good table. I mean, it looked nice over there, and the flowers looked nice on it. But that's not what a piano is for. It can function that way, but that's not what it's for. And the difference is that the piano is actually something that is intricately made, and it's designed to be able to produce incredible beauty by someone who knows what to do with it. And I think that is a little bit what it's like to live in this world without wonder, that you regard this world and you regard God and the spiritual world kind of as like a table, that maybe there's some nice flowers on, but that's all there is to it. But there's so much more. And God intends for us to enjoy the fullness of all of that. But we have been, as C.S. Lewis would put it, we have been seduced by the very strong spell or enchantment of materialism that sort of dumbed down our whole experience of this world of wonder that God has made.
I like that analogy. Was that the one you were going to spring on me? Okay. I really like that because there's so much more that's there. And I was thinking about this, like what is it that like awe is and like wonder actually is? And I think the more I thought about it, when you experience awe and wonder, some former way of thinking has been ruptured. Some mm-hmm. paradigm has been broken. You're experiencing expansion of what you previously thought was possible, or things that do not seem to go together, like dead people rising. Those things, right, that's what often, you know, or miraculous healings or gracious words that Jesus spoke with. Those were some of the things that they marveled at. But fundamentally what's happening inside of you is like, that's not how things go. Why is this? And that's kind of why, like, you can either double down and you're like, I like the way things are. This is how it's going to be. That's kind of the chief priests and like kind of the scribes, the Jewish leaders. Or you can conform yourself to this new reality that you've been exposed to, which is what wonder, like this is totally different. I didn't know this could be happening, but it's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's awesome. What are the words? All of our words go exactly back to that. It's great, you know. But that's one of the things that, I don't know, what do you think about that? I think that's actually what's happening when you begin to experience wonder and awe, is something that you thought previously has now been kind of burst open.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think part of it, as Christians, one of the things that the scriptures teach us is that this world is only a part of God's reality, and that there's this kingdom of God that this world and this life are only a small portion of. And there is this beautiful world, eternal world, that is full of truth, goodness, and beauty, that is where God dwells, that we are made for and that we are destined to, but that we get so overly focused on this life that we forget all about that. And that's one of the reasons I am such a fan of the Chronicles of Narnia, because what you see in the Chronicles of Narnia, you could say that the whole series is a polemic or an encouraging word about wonder and the kingdom of God, because what happens is that they are caught up into this other world of Narnia that is actually there all the time, but they're not aware of it. And then when they are drawn into it, it absolutely changes everything about their lives. And it fills them with joy and purpose that they just didn't have before. And I think one of the things about wonder is that it is intimately connected with joy. It is very difficult to experience awe and wonder and be emotionally unmoved by that.
Well, one of the things I loved about this topic is it converges a lot of various things that we've talked about before. Beauty, joy, all of those things kind of go hand in hand, usually with wonder and awe. But I hope in our conversation we'll talk about not only kind of the way a non-Christian, let's say, somebody who wouldn't say they're a follower of Jesus, they live, they can have wonder in their lives, mm-hmm. but I think there's something special that happens when you come to faith in Christ that throws you open to a whole new realm of wonder and awe. But I think also, so that's one thing I think we should talk about, but I think there's also another thing about, even as a Christian, I find this, I've been walking with Jesus now for, I don't know, since 2005, I guess, would be the time that I first started trusting in him. But
when you were five.
When I was like 4 years old. So, over the course of like the Christian life, there's been periods where I've been remarkably underawed, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be something that maybe folks would like to hear too, of both prior to being a Christian, there's kind of like a mechanistic view of the world, but you can even get into that same rut even as a Christian. I think those are two different things, but very similar and worthy of talking about.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And it reminds me a lot of, how many of y'all have ever seen the Broadway show or the movie of Les Mis? All right, well that's...
We should do that next time.
We should. So if you've watched that, the first song, does anybody remember what the first song is? That's a big ask.
Yeah.
It's the one where it starts, look down, yeah. Look down. And it's like so depressing. And it's all this just looking down and you're chained and you're enslaved and all of that. And I think even as Christians, sometimes that's the way that we begin to see the world. We get stuck in our routine of our work or our school or our relationships or whatever. And we just feel like it is this thing that we're stuck in. And we may pray for God to deliver us, but our daily experience is absorbed with looking down. And I think the whole idea of wonder and awe and all that the scriptures teach about it is that we're to be looking up, that we are to be looking up to where Christ is, and that we are to be looking toward that realm, and we are to be putting ourselves in places where we encounter that realm. It's just like if you were starving to death, but you were spending all of your time at the beach or in gas stations, you would probably not be very satisfied. The beach is beautiful, but there's no food there. Gas stations are not beautiful. There's fuel for your car and nasty hot dogs that maybe have been for a year in that little rotating thing. But that is not healthy food. And that's kind of the way we can be, even as Christians sometimes, that we're not putting ourselves in the places where we're going to encounter wonder, because we're not putting ourselves in the places where we're going to encounter God.
Yeah. Or the things that once captivated us don't anymore. Mm-hmm. I think when you become desensitized, right? But like the whole essence, like anybody know what the word gospel means? Nope. You said blessing? Yeah.
Good news.
Good news.
Yes.
That's right. Like, good news surprises you. I mean, it's like J.R.R. Tolkien's You Catastrophe, right? Mm-hmm. Like, something shockingly good surprises you, takes you off guard when you hear good news. And that's the very essence of the Christian faith, is the good news about Jesus. And the way what he's doing in the world, right? Or what he's done and what he's continued to do in the world. And so there's something about that, the very essence of Christianity, that is surprised by joy and the surprising good news of it. But over time, if you're not diligent, it can, even going to the right place, I don't know, at least I'm just speaking personally, it can end up becoming like a rut, and you don't experience that same surprise that you once did.
Yeah.
So what are some things, what would you say to somebody like me at various points in my life who are doing all the quote-unquote right things, but not experiencing that same first, you know, we've talked about this before, of like the first time you read your favorite book of the Bible, or the first time you read something that you really love, and that joy and wonder and all that comes with it, you can't reread it for the first time. So like, what do you do if you are supposed to cultivate that kind of wonder?
Oh, that's such a great question. I could talk about this for hours, but I'm not going to. But there's several things that I think are really important. And one is that God has made us as human beings in his image. You have senses. And those senses are deeply connected with this idea of wonder. And so we need to put ourselves in places where we experience the fullness of God's revelation. And so some of what that means is breaking our routines, focusing on doing things like being outside and actually seeing when we are outside. We are in perhaps the most hurried culture in the history of the world. There's a great book by John Mark Comer that's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry that I would highly recommend. But one practice that I think really helps when you're feeling sort of tired and not experiencing the wonder is spending time outside and trying to be fully present and looking at things that are beautiful and really looking at them. Mm-hmm. Like when you walk around Charleston, there's a lot of beauty around here. And it's really easy to walk down the street and say, that was a beautiful street. But if you stop and look at like the Confederate jasmine that's blooming right now, and you literally take your head and put it into that vine and inhale deeply, unless you have bad allergies, it is incredible. And you think about how did this thing that grew out of the dark ground produce these beautiful flowers with this incredibly beautiful fragrance? And then you take that and then begin to turn that toward appreciating the fact that God made all of these things. Music is another way to be able to enter into that. Worship can be a way to enter into that. Particularly if you feel a little bit jaded with the worship that you're used to, go visit a different church. Don't leave your church for good, but go visit, do something that's different. That can help wake you up a little bit. I think another thing that can be really great is poetry. Poetry is really good about slowing you down and making you think and consider things. And there's so much really wonderful Christian poetry out there that will bless your soul if you will engage with it. So I think those are all things. And then another one that is really important is fantasy literature. And it has to be the right kind.
That's literally all five of the things that I thought.
Of
like,
course it is.
Random. Yeah, it's great.
But things like The Lord of the Rings or Narnia, part of the reason that Tolkien and Lewis wrote these was for this theological reason of trying to recover wonder and enchantment. And Tolkien has this incredible essay that's called On Fairy Stories that I'm getting ready to teach on. Starting next week. But he talks about the reason we need stories like this is threefold. The first thing he says, we need it for recovery. And what he means by that is he said, when you live in this world and you're living in the day-to-day grind of the world, your vision gets clouded, almost like you have a dirty Charleston pollen-covered windshield on your car. And you can sort of see, but you don't really see clearly. And he says, reading a good fantasy story that talks about what is good and true and beautiful and where there's virtue and heroism and all of that, it fires your soul again. And it makes you realize that there are things like that. He also talks about that kind of literature can be an escape. And he said, people say, oh, it's bad to read things that are escapist. He said, no, it's not. If you're in jail, and he said a lot of times living in this world can feel like being in a jail sometimes, who wouldn't want to get out of the jail and to read about a place where it is beautiful and where good is rewarded and evil is punished? And then the last thing he talks about is consolation and just the reminder that ultimately these fairy stories, they're ones that are grounded in Christianity, they point to the truth that God has won the victory, and that what we just celebrated this past Sunday, Jesus rising from the dead, has sealed that victory. No matter how discouraged we can get sometimes in this life, we have to remember that this life is not all there is, and these fantasy stories can help remind us about that.
Yeah. Boy, there's so much that you just said that I want to reflect on, but I think the first thing is artists in general. You talked about paintings or music or literature. I think this is one of the basically, what is an artist? What is their role? What are they trying to do? One of the things that I've heard that I really like is that artists simply try to tell the truth mm-hmm. about the world, and they do so in ways that are fresh and new, that are eye-catching. That's what makes good art, I guess, is when you have somebody who is able to tell something that all of us know and see, but it's like we've never seen it that way before.
Yeah.
And I think that is what is one of the commonalities of good art, and that spans all the senses, whether it's music or paintings, that sort of thing. But it made me also think about some of your sermon titles, which you have unique ways of. I love the ways that you do sermon. You often will just do a verb.
Yeah.
Marvel, hearken, contemplate. And yeah. Those all involve what wonder does, which is the first time you actually truly wonder, it just comes at you, you're surprised, something happens, and you're just marveling. And it's a reaction. You're not like, I'm going to go sit out to wonder today. Like, and no, it's something that comes at you and you're going, oh my goodness, I can't imagine. And it breaks your step. It makes you stop and pause. One of the things that's critical in cultivating that wonder, because in some ways, and I think Lewis would agree with this, is like, you can't force those kind of moments.
Right. Yep.
There is a place where it's just going to come at you, but you can nevertheless still begin to slow down as you were forced to slow down when you first encountered whatever it was that made you, you know, be in amazement. But it's important to actually go back and try to contemplate. And if there's one thing, if there's one muscle that we've all grown really weak in, is the muscle of contemplation. Mm-hmm. We are in a digital age where our attention spans are super short.
8.5 seconds.
Yeah, 8.5 seconds. You go out there and you try
shorter than a goldfish.
Look at that street that you're talking about, and all of a sudden, you know, my mind's racing to anything else and the squirrel that's running around and stuff like that. But I think that's right. I think it's trying to build those muscles of contemplation and really looking and naming and describing for yourself what is it that's so good. And if there's one verse in my mind of the whole Bible that really encapsulates this whole topic, it's Philippians 4:8, right? And I think you've preached on this before, but finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things and contemplate these things,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, and I just imagine if everyone did that. I'm not going to ask you what all you've been thinking about today, but if you had been thinking intentionally about what is good, true, beautiful, worthy of praise, if that was what you set your mind on intentionally each day, and all people who were trying to follow Jesus did that, we would turn the world upside down.
Yeah, and I think part of being a Christian, especially in the Christian life, is you're trying to, like, I love the way you put it, like, I guess that was Lewis, who said that the world is under a spell, and
yeah.
We're constantly, and I think especially since the Enlightenment, we're prone to think about this world in a very naturalistic, mechanical kind of way, and the reality is if we have a God who's made us in his image, who cares about us in this world, and every little thing, from the seats that we're sitting on right now that, you know, science would say, well, it's gravity. Well, it's like, actually, the Bible says it's the word of God's power that's upholding everything at every moment. And so part of growing in our wonder is to actually think about the intimacy, the presence of God, and also the transcendence of God. So both the immanence, his presence everywhere with us, and what does that really mean in everything I think and say and do and how I go about my day, but also just the incredible magnitude and the grace of God. Those are things that there are no depths. You never reach the end of that.
Right.
I forget, I'm butchering it, but it's like the gospel is shallow enough for somebody who's a child to wade out into, but it's deep enough also that you never reach the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Like an elephant can go into it
yeah.
and never sink. So I think about eternity is the contemplation of the wonders of who God is and who we are and his grace towards us. Mm-hmm. And so there's, that's the sort of thing to just set your mind to. Why does this matter? Like, why would it matter? Like, I'm sure we could leave here. What difference would it make in our lives if we actually encountered more wonder?
Well, I think it is like what the Westminster Confession says, which is, what is the chief end of man?
To glorify God and enjoy him forever.
Yes, to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And I think if you ask a lot of Christians, they would say our purpose is to be obedient to God. Mm. And that's part of it. But we are made for joy. And Lewis takes that a little step further and says, joy is the serious business of heaven. And I think the reason that this matters so much is that when you begin to get a hold of this idea, joy breaks out in your life. And we live in a culture where people are miserable and full of despair. And if you're someone that has joy in your life, people are going to ask you about it. And so I think it is part of the way that we help to share the gospel and to help people understand about the kingdom. And some of the language that's used around this theologically is the whole idea of the fact that we live in a disenchanted world and that we don't believe in the supernatural anymore and that disenchantment is profoundly sad. So part of the goal of Christians should be re-enchantment, to bring back the beauty and wonder and understanding that God is loving and purposeful and destines us for joy, and that when we have that sort of framework, it changes the way that we see reality.
Yeah. I think another word too, so joy is one that pops off the, you know, my mind as we're thinking about what difference wonder makes. Another word is humility. Mm-hmm. When you are marveling at something outside of yourself, that's in one sense what humility actually is. You're thinking less of yourself. And you're actually beginning to reorient yourself around something outside of you. And particularly if you're marveling at God, you're going to have, on the one hand, kind of a lower view of yourself, a proper view of yourself, I should say, because God himself, he gave himself for you. He took on flesh, which you can ponder that, and how can the infinite become finite? Why would he do that? Well, it's for me. And the more you think about that, the more gratitude, the more joy, and also the more humility you will have. But it's also a kind of, it's true humility. It's a confidence to be able to go about life with a joy and a buoyancy that really the world needs to experience and see. So I think the key in so many ways to being a witness around us is experiencing true wonder and awe and marveling at the things that God has done, who he is, and what he's continuing to do. It enables you to have those, the ability to actually sacrifice for others because you're not so concerned with yourself. You have a joy and a confidence that can't be taken away from you because it's not rooted in you.
Yeah, and I think that goes so much to what Augustine drew out of his understanding of the scriptures. And he came up with this idea, the ordo amoris, the rightly ordered loves, and that when our loves are rightly ordered, then we experience joy and satisfaction in our lives and we flourish as human beings. But when we wrongly order our loves, we can set ourselves up for all sorts of misery. And we live in a culture that tells us that our love of ourselves, that we should make ourselves the center of the universe. And what Augustine would say is that when we do that, when we live that way and live for that kind of pleasure, we will be miserable because we have gotten things in the wrong order. But that when we get things right, when we have that right concept of God that brings us to a place of humility, that sets us up to be able to then begin to love in a way that causes flourishing. And you see this over and over again in the Psalms. Psalm 8 talks about looking up and considering the heavens, the works of God's hands. And then the psalmist says, what is man that you are mindful of him? And you know, it's this whole idea that when you think about the vastness of who God is and all that he has done, and you get this in worship too, it puts you back in your right place. And we live in a culture that wants to put way too much weight on the individual, that we have to figure out all these things rather than understanding ourselves as being placed into this grand design that God has already made.
That's so good. Yeah. Well, it's about that time, and I don't know if there's any final things you have to say, but be curious how we're doing on questions. Matthew?
We have three so far.
Okay, we have a few. So
yeah, we have three so far.
All right. Do we want to take a moment and, as you guys maybe ask a question or two, Brian, is there any kind of concluding thoughts you have?
I will give a couple of book plugs here.
We brought a number tonight.
All of these things, so I don't turn over my glass of wine while I'm at it. This is a little bit of a weird book, but it is one of those chew up the meat, spit out the bones books. That's called Living in Wonder. It has some really great stuff in it that I would recommend. Another great book by a great Christian intellectual named Oz Guinness. It's short. Signals of Transcendence, talking about the fact that this world is not all there is. A Well of Wonder, essays about Lewis and the Inklings with a lot of anecdotes, so good. Born to Wonder by Alistair McGrath, who's one of the most brilliant theologians in the world. I'm super excited. We'll probably have a tot on this in the fall. So I'm doing an Oxford Theology Summer School that is entitled Breaking the Spell, C.S. Lewis and the Undeceiving of Our Generation. So that is going to be really fascinating.
That's when you decide to tell me you're doing that? That's amazing. When is that?
That's my little bombshell for you.
Yeah.
That's the last week of August.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Might be going with you.
Come on.
That sounds really... What is it called?
Breaking the Spell, C.S. Lewis and the Undeceiving of Our Generation.
With
Alistair. Taught by Alistair McGrath and Simon Harbin.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. Or
I'm not jealous. I swear. All right, let's go ahead. Jump
all right,
in.
Let's start with the interesting one that for me to pronounce. Does Harrowing of Hell, preserved in the Descensus ad Inferos, relate to hope offered in Anaphora of Adai and Mari, or Anamnesis and Irenaeus' Recapitulation?
I got the Harrowing of Hell.
I got the Harrowing of Hell, and I got Irenaeus. I sort of missed the Latin that was in the middle.
It was Descensus ad Inferos. Relates to hope offered in Anaphora of Adai and Mari.
I'm pulling it up so that you can read it. Because I'm letting you answer that. Loading.
So
there we go. Yeah, I have no idea what most of those words are. You want to speak on the Harrowing of Hell? I think that's.
I do not know about the Anaphora of Adai and Mari, but the Harrowing of Hell is something that is a theological doctrine that was particularly dear to people in the Middle Ages. And it is the whole idea of what happens when Christ goes into hell after he has died on the cross. And as he goes through hell, he is liberating the captives there. And so that whole topic really fired up the medieval imagination. So there are a lot of early medieval works that talk about that. That also had a big impact on Dante's Inferno and that whole work. I'm not quite sure how that relates to Irenaeus. This is one of those things where I think if you are seriously interested in that, you can talk to us after.
Yeah, sounds good. The Harrowing of Hell, though, if you've seen the artwork that depicts, it's pretty awesome. Like,
there's
a few things that, like, when you think about what Jesus came to do, which is to rescue us from the clutches of Satan and sin and death, like, I can get behind some of those images that are, like, Jesus knocking down the gates, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and Dante's Inferno, if you've never read Dante, I would encourage you to find a reader-friendly version of that and check it out. It is really, really, really good. And that whole idea that Dante's exploring there with the harrowing of hell is also very much the idea that C.S. Lewis is talking about in his book, The Great Divorce, which is more accessible than Dante, so also a good thing to read.
We're getting political with this next one. Do you think that Vice President Vance murdered the Pope?
Okay. No. I think we can be very confident
about
that.
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But thanks for playing.
Yeah. Next.
Next, what book of the Bible or Bible stories do you recommend to read to grow in wonder?
Oh, there's so many, and that's a great question. Psalms is a great place, especially Psalm 8 and Psalm 19. I would also say the book of Hebrews, especially chapters 10, 11, and 12 are really, really good. Revelation chapter 21 is another good place, and really any of the Gospels are really good.
Those are really good. I would add, I mean, any place is going to be, ultimately, it's God's Word. He's doing the same thing as he speaks in any part of his Word, so that's good. But the book of Romans is another place where Paul reaches, as Paul's epistles especially, but I would say particularly Romans, he reaches the limits of human understanding, trying to trace the mind of God in salvation.
Right, the whole plan of salvation.
And it ends, one of my favorite verses is the very end of Romans 11, where he's tried to, how do you reconcile what God did in the Old Testament with the Israelites and his chosen people, and yet now in Christ, and tracing like election and salvation and all this. And he comes to just basically, which is exactly what you should do when we reach these limits.
Go to a doxology.
We should just burst out in praise.
Yep.
And I think that was one of the impulses that is absolutely right. The Reformers got this, but I think a lot of the people in the church, when we trace what we see in Scripture and we kind of chase the rabbit, so to speak, all the way to its end, to as far as our mind can go, when we reach the end and we can't go any further, we have to just bend our knee and lift up our voices in praise and song. But he ends up saying, who has known the mind of the Lord? Who has been his counselor? Oh, the depths and riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his ways. From him, through him, and to him are all things.
Yep.
That's like my favorite verse in the Bible. Think about those little short prepositions and all that's contained.
Yep.
From him, through him, and to him. So Romans is great, but really anywhere in Scripture. If you do the work of contemplating, you'll be amazed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the great ways to contemplate, if you find that you have trouble doing that, is to read it out loud, and read it out loud multiple times, maybe even read it out loud with someone else.
Yeah, it's okay to read multiple times, too. I think that's one of the things I've loved, is trying to read slowly, and you read the same passage, even just four or five times in a row, and you'll see things all of a sudden as you go through it that are, it's pretty neat.
Yeah.
How do we offer this wonder to others sitting in deep depression or suffering?
That's a really good question.
That is a really good question. I think one way you can do that is to choose, see if you could interest them perhaps in reading a book with you and then talking about it. Getting somebody to read a Narnia story with you is not usually a big ask. The chapters in the Narnia stories are only 7 pages long, as people can deal with that. But that's a great way to sort of bring a third party into the conversation who can help you. I think sharing from your own experience can be good. I think listening to what in particular is causing the person to be in the place that they're in, inviting them to go on walks, places that are beautiful, go and be and worship together, all of those kinds of things I think could be helpful.
So the friends that I've had that have struggled with depression, like there's different, I guess, levels of depression, I would say. And initially, I think it's important when I think to a couple friends in particular who, I mean, it was like a fog comes in and it's like this blend of apathy and just feeling blue and I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
I don't even want to move. It was so much.
Immobilized.
Yeah. It was like, honestly, the biggest thing is just trying to get up and to walk to my mailbox, was like the biggest thing. I was like, wow, that I can't imagine. But don't overlook the importance and the wonder of actually just being present.
Yes.
With other people. I think that's probably the best thing to do with somebody who's really struggling with depression initially, is just to be there and to listen, as you said, and to just sit with them. And there's something wonderful and amazing about the fact that we are communal creatures and you're with somebody. There's a lot that happens just in that act. But then, as you talked about, as you begin to maybe move out of that and let's walk together, and you go for a walk, and as you start to get moving, sometimes that fog can start to lift and you can begin to probe as to like what's going on in their head and their heart. But usually that first step is like, I remember for me, I just wanted to like tell him all the good stuff. And it was like, it's not connecting. And I needed to just kind of sit with him and encourage him and just thank him for letting me know that he's really struggling, that I appreciate that. And there's something awesome even in the vulnerability of saying, I just feel so discouraged and so depressed, I guess. So.
And there's a really interesting study that just came out that's not a Christian study, but it was looking at alternative ways of trying to treat people with serious depression who were young adults. And so the control group was being treated sort of in the normal way with therapy and certain medications. The other group was given a regimen of walking outdoors and listening to classical music. And the walking outdoors, listening to classical music group, at the end of the study, by every measure, was in better shape than the ones with the traditional.
You throw diet, exercise, and sleep in there, and you're all of a sudden, usually those are the top care facilities are prescribing those very things, which is what happens to be one of those ways that you're like, oh, God actually thought about this first.
Before, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good question, though. I think recognizing the person where they're at, doing your best to meet them where they're at. And I think one of the challenging things is not giving too much right off the bat.
Yeah.
And but you'll grow in wisdom and discernment doing that.
How can we develop a childlike mindset in our relationship with God?
Oh, we didn't even talk about children. And they have, is
that, right.
Yeah, that's a huge component.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And that is a theme that you see from Jesus over and over again, is the idea of, and Paul too, of becoming like children. Part of the thing about children is that they are prepared for wonder. They are not enslaved to rationality. And so there's an openness and an innocence in children that is completely uncynical. And we live in arguably the most cynical culture that has ever existed. And so I think one of the chief ways to begin to develop that childlike sense of wonder is to try to root out cynicism in your life, and to also look at what you're inviting into your mind by what you're watching, what you're listening to, all of those kinds of things. Because if you're getting a steady diet of things that are deeply cynical, it's going to be very hard to have childlike wonder. Another good way to do that is to spend some time with children, because it will remind you about childlike wonder.
Yeah. If you need children to spend, I have some, and they're wonderful. But no, there's something about, actually my three-year-old right now, she is at this, like her mouth is going nonstop, and it's just, Molly and I were reflecting, she's so happy. She's just nonstop delighting, and it's her imagination that's going crazy throughout the day and the night and all hours of the night, and it really is quite amazing. But I think back when we lived in Philadelphia, our firstborn, I remember being struck, she had no inhibition. Like and this is one of the things for me, I was a pretty social introvert, and just when I got home, I wanted to be home, but she wanted to go outside, we're going to walk around, she'd go up, and there'd be people on the street, and she'd look at them and talk to them. And I'm like, oh no, I did not plan for this. Like being a 25-year-old adult where now all of a sudden I have to talk to another random stranger on the streets of Philadelphia that my 2-year-old has decided to open up a conversation with. This is wild. But actually, that lack of inhibition, it turned out, it drew me, like that 2-year-old drew me out in a way that I was not prepared. Mm-hmm. But guess what? You got to roll with it with little ones. That's one of the things. They're just going to do it. And I'm so glad that made me uncomfortable, because it actually led me into conversations, and it led me into other places too. But I think that's one of the ways, is you lose some inhibition, not with drugs or anything like that, but like you are forced into community, you're forced into, that's one of the things, it is so strange to talk to people on the street or in various areas. It can be, I guess, you're prone to just talk to anybody, but for me, that was always, that was a frightening thing. And I think a lot of folks that are, you know, lonely and experiencing, how do I cultivate a friendship? How do I talk to people? Well, this 2-year-old literally just did it. And just being around children, but learning that too, is like, ooh, get out of your comfort zone to be able to strike up a conversation or do some social things that you wouldn't normally do, is one way that you can grow and wonder.
Yeah, for sure.
Couple more.
My next one, what is your favorite way to shock the system when you haven't wondered in a while? Any recommendations on poetry or a specific activity that helps with wonder?
So I think one of the best ways that can be helpful, especially since it's easy because we live in Charleston, going to the ocean is a pretty good way to refire your sense of wonder. To be barefoot and stand in the water, it's pretty hard to just have no wonder at all in that circumstance. I also think that there are certain poets that are really, really good on wonder. Jared Manley Hopkins is one of my favorites for wonder. I think there's so many that I could go on and on, but Lewis and Tolkien both wrote poetry that's good for wonder. Reading aloud parts of some of their works, even that it's not poetry, I think can help fire wonder. Worship, that's glorious worship, can do that. Even YouTube, there's a lot of bad stuff on YouTube, but there's also a lot of amazing stuff. Any choral Christian work that you might ever have heard of, you can find one of the great choirs of the world with an orchestra singing it on YouTube, and those kinds of things can help fire your sense of wonder. King's College Cambridge, pretty much anything they do on YouTube will help fire your sense of wonder.
That's great. I like this question, because especially the ways it's talking about just shocking the system.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, like right now, I'm in a season of life where if I get like an hour or two by myself, it's like, wow, this is incredible. So the things that I need to shock the system are actually to like spend a day away.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to, one of the things I'd love to do, we've talked about this before, but go to Mebkin Abbey and do like a silent retreat and take a journal, take some like, you know, the music that you love, take the things that you love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like and then begin to write and journal and think about what's so great that I love about this. And then begin a conversation with God about those things. That's what I would do. If I had to kind of, you know, reinvest my life with a sense of wonder, I'd take a day. I'd go somewhere where I could be out. The beauty of that place is outside with the oaks on the water. And I would probably not bring a screen, only because I know the temptation to like just read or watch crummy things that would not be, you know, as awe-inspiring. It would not be those things.
Uh-huh.
No. It would be Netflix or something like that. But the taking some books that, you know, actually this summer I'm really excited about. I didn't told you this yet, but the trilogy of C.S. Lewis, the space trilogy, which I hate science fiction, but I remember reading that in college, and I had to for class, and I was like 40 pages into that Out of the Silent Planet going, this is incredible. And so one of the ways that I want to kind of reinvigorate wonder in my own life is to go back to those books that, you know, 2009, I guess it was, when I read them. And I haven't really read them since then, but to go back and see maybe what do I see differently in these things.
Mm-hmm.
But those things that really drew me at some point, and that's something to consider. Go back into your life where you did experience wonder and maybe read and listen to or observe those similar things and see if it'll probably do the same thing, but maybe in a slightly different way.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Maybe one more?
One more. if you are not in a space of wonder, then are you being sanctified?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I would say you could be. I think it would be, it could be either way. I think that if you, sometimes you are being sanctified, God is working on you in ways that may at the moment seem painful and not full of wonder. But I think on the other hand, there can be times where God is sanctifying you by giving you a deeper vision of the wonder of his kingdom. So I think maybe the answer to that is it depends.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably right. Like, even if you're not in a sense of wonder, I think that God often brings us through the valleys of our walk with him for a reason and to expose our need of him and to recognize that, like, actually we do need to cultivate that. So I think that is part and parcel, kind of the process of sanctification, even when you are becoming dry. But you certainly need, once you realize that, to begin to walk in the ways that are going to lead to the life that God intends for you. So any final words that you have, or should we just wrap up, I think?
All I would say is there is so much joy that is part of wonder. And if you feel like you've got a wonder deficit, that would be a great thing to work on, because you will find deep blessing in that.
And that's part of why we started this in the first place, was the things that we both really loved and wanting to share those things with others, and how we're continually captivated by the beautiful things both in faith and in life that we experience. So thanks for being a part of this. And thank you all for coming out tonight.
Yep.
We'll be
thanks
around. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Sounds good.